live from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. This is TalkBack, your opportunity to call in and share your thoughts and questions, concerns, the issues that are important to you. Our number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. You can also watch the program by going to ustream.tv. That's the letter U, S-T-R-E-A-M, .tv, and search for Gary Null. Last week, we were hacked one day, even though we have a substantial firewall and a really good IT person. Evidently, they were not happy with what we were talking about. But fortunately, because you had telephones, you could call. And that's one more reason to always have this telephone number so you can call if for any other reason you're not hearing us on your land-based station or over the Internet. That number is 712-432-7231. 712-432-7231. But there are times when so many people are calling in to listen that there's another number, 401-347-0456, 401-347-0456. Today, the latest on why you should eat your cruciferous vegetables, cabbage, broccoli, kale, watercress, is called I3C as well as DIM. Now, those are just letters, but they're actually natural dual action protection against all cancers. I'll share the latest from Del Kiefer on that. And then I want to do a more comprehensive challenge to the medical community that does not use bioidentical hormones. In fact, the attacks against bioidentical hormones. We have consulted with Bill Falloon of Life Extension, probably the most knowledgeable person in the United States on this, and we have all the evidence that bioidentical hormones are really important for you and not synthetic hormone replacement therapy. I'll share that with you. We have a lot on health and nutrition. From our environmental segment, from Michael Clare of Tom's Dispatch, what's wrong with our energy policy? It's a short piece, but it really tells you that the American Association for the Advancement of Science, which is not an alarmist organization, have made some very dire predictions about what's going to happen now and in the near future. So concerned were we in this office that we contacted the 10 leading environmental experts in the world and asked them, come on the air and tell us, what do you see happening? What's your evidence? When will this happen and how severe will it be? We had a chance to find out. It's not pretty. One more reason why we should be preparing ourselves, which we can, to get out of harm's way, which we can. But if you're the average person and you watch Katrina, meaning you don't change, you don't move out of harm's way, you just continue as if you're not going to be affected, not a good outcome to that story. Also, genetically modified crops in Iowa fail as beetle larvae develop resistance. Also, a challenge to NPR, National Public Radio, and other major media. You are spreading serious falsehoods about the human papillomavirus vaccine. We will offer a challenge through the National Alliance for Health USA. We're calling all these people out. Now, in doing so, I'm also inviting any host or science writer for the National Public Radio to come on this program and have a debate with me on this issue. You could be a medical doctor, a PhD, a scientist. If you believe that the human papillomavirus vaccine is safe and effective, I'm calling you out. I'm asking, come on and debate me. You'll be treated with dignity and respect. You'll be given absolute the same amount of time. We don't allow bloodbaths on this program. We're more civil than that. But it's time that the public saw what's on our side, the parents. I just left the other room in our office here, and there's a family. They have a son, and this was their first visit today. The son has advanced autism. The parents said, we have absolute proof with films and that were taken that he was completely normal until we got all these vaccines. And then we lost our son. And then when we started to ask, nobody wanted to acknowledge that it could possibly be the vaccine. To the contrary, we were discriminated against. We were told that we didn't know what we were talking about. We weren't medical doctors. We weren't nurses. Yeah, but they didn't have a son that had autism after getting vaccines. We did. Gary, the mother said, we have contacted so many parents who have the same story to say as ours. Can you deal with this? She had not even watched my latest documentary, multi-award-winning documentary called The Silent Epidemic. It's there as a public service to watch. She had not watched Vaccine Nation, and she had not watched Autism Made in the USA. She had not read any of the 27 major scholarly articles that we have written to help parents and those who are confused, who to believe, what to believe. Ours are all cited, but the information is there. So that's why I'm calling out NPR and to give them an opportunity to come on here and defend what they use. They use their NPR as a public relations platform for Big Pharma. It's time that they were called out on it. Also, I'm going to talk about trading away democracy. We have helped lead the charge to inform the public that Trans-Pacific Partnership is a fraud. It will destroy our Bill of Rights, our Constitution, all state laws, federal laws. You will have no protection from the predators. Some 75,000 corporations that would benefit if the Trans-Pacific Partnership Treaty and the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership passed. Our Congress has been bought and our Supreme Court is worthless. The media is compliant to those in power. We'll tell you why we should be even more concerned. Also, I'm going to deal with several issues, including how predatory college loans are bankrupting the financial future of America's youth, and, if time permits, the prison industry in the United States. Some say it's just good big business. You think? I say it's a new form of slavery. We'll explore it. But the whole while, we're going to take your calls when they start to come in. I've been advocating at least 1 to 2 servings of cruciferous vegetables per day. Now, it's easy to make them, even for those who may not like the taste of some, like cauliflower, which tends to be rather bland, and broccoli, which some people for some reason don't like. Easy way to do it, first and foremost, you simply steam them. Now, the steam does not destroy the antioxidants, the phytonutrients, the chlorophyll, but it does soften the tissue, what is called lignocellulose. In effect, it allows this hard fibrous material to open up, and therefore the healing power of the enzymes, the chlorophyll, the phytonutrients to be released. And then what you do, you steam them for 5 minutes, you run cold water over them, then you put them in your fridge. I like to marinate them. I take 2 or 3 different types of mustard, some horseradish, some apple cider vinegar, and some cayenne, some Himalayan sea salt. I mix that together with some extra virgin olive oil, and then I cut up the broccoli and the cauliflower and asparagus and Brussels sprouts, and you put them in, let them soak overnight. Cover them so they're actually marinating. And then the next day, you put that into a salad or make some quinoa or brown rice, and then stir that into it with the salad marinara. It's just delicious. In fact, mustard is in the cruciferous family, as is horseradish. But the reason why I want you to have the cruciferous vegetables is because of 2 primary chemicals. One is called I3C. That stands for indole-3-carbinol. And the other is DIM, and I'll get to that in a moment. The DIMN is a precursor. It's a diindole methane. Now what you have is you have unique cancer-fighting benefits. These compounds have been found to alter estrogen metabolism in both men and women, and that means it protects you against hormone-dependent cancers such as those of the breast, cervix, and prostate. And it's delicious also. I mean, if you like sauerkraut, that's made from cabbage. That's one way of getting it also. According to the American Cancer Society, diet and lack of adequate exercise are about one-third of all cancers in the United States. Now, look at the 1.5 million new cases of cancer that will be diagnosed this year. We're going to have 550,000 people die this year of cancer, and colon cancer is completely preventable if you gave up meat and charcoal meat and fried foods and deep-fried foods and pizzas. We wouldn't have any colorectal cancer as such. But this year we'll probably have 65,000 people die of colon cancer because they're eating foods that's overly processed, especially meat, and then that really slows down your digestion, what is called peristalsis, the wave-like movement that just visualizes a snake across the sand. That's similar to what your intestines do to bring food through that the entire alimentary canal. But when you have fat, animal fat, you create inflammation. When you have animal proteins that are cooked, especially at higher temperatures, you create inflammation. But you also create a traffic jam. When you're eating vegetables and fruits and seeds and nuts, that's like traffic going at 65 miles an hour. When you have a hot dog, a hamburger, pizza, a milkshake, cheese, you've just slowed it down to 5 miles an hour. That is a danger to your intestines, and that's what causes inflammation, which can lead to polyps, which can lead to precancerous, and then cancer. So the more vegetables you have, the better it is. Now, we know that the chemicals, there's a group of chemicals that are found in cruciferous vegetables called glucosinolates. Now, the glucosinolates are extremely important. They're converted to highly beneficial compounds called isothiocyanates. Isothiocyanates, C-Y-A-N-A-T-E-S. And one of them is called sulforaphane. And indoles, such as indole-3-carbinol, are part of that. And what's important is that these inhibit cancer in the body. The conversion of glucosinolates to isothiocyanates occurs naturally, and that's when you're eating the vegetables. When you're not, then you don't get that conversion, you don't get that benefit. Now, while cruciferous vegetables supply numerous compounds, indole-3-carbinol is the real reason to eat your broccoli, at least, but it's also, according to the Journal of Nutritional Biochemistry, quote, mounting preclinical and clinical evidence indicates that the indole-3-carbinol, a key bioactive food component in cruciferous vegetables, has multiple anti-carcinogenic and anti-mutagenic properties, end quote. So it's obvious. Millions of people worldwide, over thousands of years, have been eating inherently safe foods that help prevent disease. And suppress cancer growth and induce programmed cell death in a variety of tumors, including breast, prostate, endothelial, leukemia, and colon cancers. So the takeaway message is this. Eat your cruciferous vegetables. It's so important. And also for those of you who are concerned about estrogen, you do not want an imbalance of estrogen against progesterone if you're overweight, if you're eating animal products, and if you're stressed. Why? Because those three conditions, which most Americans have, produces a negative form of estrogen in the body. And perhaps the most single important mechanism action of indole-3-carbinol and DIM is modulating estrogen metabolism. And this is because estrogen receptors are present on the surface of virtually every type of tissue in the body of both men and women, and are associated with several hormone-dependent cancers. Now, the body modifies or metabolizes estrogen through two mutually exclusive pathways, which lead to compounds with dramatically different biological activities. Estradiol, that's estra, E-S-T-R-A, diol, D-I-O-L, is the primary estrogen in circulation and one of the most active. It is metabolized to a number of other chemicals, all with some degree of estrogenic activity. I'll try to make it as simple as possible because I realize that this can be a little complicated. The enzymes 2-hydroxylase and 16-alpha-hydroxylase help metabolize estrogens. Several years ago, scientists hypothesized that a preference towards the 2-hydroxyoxylase pathway, which generates 2-hydroxyestrione, results in less toxic estrogen in the circulation, and which results in less breast cancer, less prostate cancer, less ovarian cancer. On the other hand, they reasoned, women in whom a predominance of estrogens tend to be metabolized via the 16-alpha-hydroxylase pathway, leading to greater amounts of more biologically potent forms, the bad estrogen, which is 16-alpha-hydroxyestrione, which that brings you at greater risk of cancer. Now, if you are an average woman in the United States, you are taking 25% of all women over the age of 40 are taking some form of antidepressant or anti-anxiety medication, which itself can be carcinogenic. You're consuming alcohol on a regular basis, not to get drunk, but alcohol. You're eating meat 2 to 3 times a day, and more meat than what the body actually benefits from protein. And you're eating a lot of processed foods and sugars. What this does is this creates the 16, the bad, alpha-hydroxylase metabolism of your estrogen. And then that gives you the bad form of estrogen in the body, the 16-alpha-hydroxylase pathway, which leads to 16-alpha-hydroxyestrione. The good estrogen in the body is 2. Just remember, make it real simple. Estrogen is good, 2. Where does it come from? Vegetables and herbs and fruits. The bad, 16. Where does it come from? Meat and dairy and pesticides. That's the best way of understanding that. So that at least allows us to have a better way of understanding that if you want healthier estrogen, make sure that you're eating vegan, vegetarian, raw, healthy, and protect yourself against hormone-induced breast cancer. Breast cancer is the most common cancer and the second leading cause of cancer-related death in women. We know that it's not genetics. It's alcohol, it's inflammation, it's diet, it's lack of exercise, and it's stress, environmental factors. We also know that hormones play a crucial role in influencing breast cancer risk. And in fact, we know that women's cumulative lifetime exposure to hormones helps determine a risk of developing breast cancer. So if you've been eating meat for a long time, even with the idea that you're eating it for good reasons, it's contributing to a hormone dominance. And that is not good. Other women take the hormone replacement therapy, like conjugated equine estrogens combined with synthetic progestins, and that really increases your risk of breast cancer. So one of the most important ways to prevent this is taking your cruciferous vegetables and get your protection against hormone-induced breast cancer. And that's why you want to do the right thing, eat the right foods, and you can reduce your risk of cancer. Also, cancer researchers have been paying a lot of attention to vitamin D. And scientists know that vitamin D functions as a hormone, affecting immune response and acting in various ways to protect against cancer. And vitamin D is available in foods and supplements. Generally from 1 to 3 or 4,000 units of vitamin D3 is fine, as well as through a naturally occurring activity like sun. Ultraviolet light will help you. Now, the component in vitamin D that's anti-cancer is derived from the, or that is, should be taken with vitamin D, is from the herb that many of you have used called rosemary. It acts to enhance vitamin D's biochemical activity. It is called carnosic acid, and also carnosol, found in rosemary, are great in polyphenols that have been shown to aid vitamin D's efforts to thwart cancer. Rather than killing cancer cells outright, as many chemotherapeutic agents do, vitamin D halts cancer by forcing precancerous cells to differentiate or become, in essence, more mature cells. And because cancer is characterized by less mature cells, a process compels these cells to become more mature is beneficial to fighting cancer. So get your rosemary and get your vitamin D, and that will help you. I'm Gary Nall. We're talking about the issues that make a difference in our lives. I'm going to switch over. I'm going to start taking calls now, so you can call in at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. A few things from our environmental segment. I'm going to be kind of bringing in different topics depending upon the flow of calls. From our environmental segment today, this is from Natural News. Quote, in the decades ahead, will humanity sit and watch as the biotech industry continues to expand, keeping nature dominated while decimating all those insects that eat away at corporate profits? How might genetically altered seeds and pesticides push honeybees to total collapse as vegetables and herbs go without pollination, pushed away into oblivion? One day, real vegetables and herbs and fruits could be pushed into endangerment, becoming some of the most costly food commodities. How will nature fight back as the survival of biodiversity and agriculture sits on the chopping block? Genetically modified crops like corn, soybeans, and cotton are now dominating in the United States, which has become the hub of biotechnology. Last year alone, nearly 85% of America's corn production was genetically engineered, 91% of soybeans, 88% of cotton. The genetic alterations create a highly profitable and controllable seed. GMO corn can be derived from a bacterium, a bacillus, and the BT gene splice helps the corn generate its own poison after it's planted, killing off beetles and other pests who dare take a bite. As time wears on, though, mature nature begins to fight back as the beetles grow stronger than the toxin. In a new report out of Iowa, biotechnology researchers have concerned themselves about the failure of their profitable GM crops. The western corn rootworm, which is a beetle larva, has become resistant to two strains of genetically modified corn. Farmers in Iowa are reporting that the beetles have begun to amass, take over their GMO corn as the new forms of larvae shrug off the toxins. It didn't take long for nature to begin outsmarting scientists. They started to see this in 2009, and now it's rampant. So, when they tell you, oh, we've got the future, not a problem, yes, there's a problem. And nature is fighting back, and now you have disease-resistant insects. From Michael Clare, Tom Dispatch, quote, There was a rare intervention by the American Association for the Advancement of Science, which issued a report warning that, quote, the rate of climate change now may be as fast as any extended warming period over the past 65 million years and is projected to accelerate in the coming decades. There is a risk added of, quote, abrupt, unpredictable, and potentially irreversible changes in the Earth's climate system, with massively disruptive impacts. I said this to everyone about 6 years ago, and I've said it since. What would happen if you went to bed one night? Everything seemed normal, were controllable in your world. And what would happen if you woke up the next day to find out that the ocean had risen a foot? Now, according to historical mathematical models, that might happen in 200 years. According to chaos theory, it could happen at any time. but there had to be something that would cause part of the Greenland ice shelf, it's about much larger than the state of Texas, about three times the size of Texas, and about 2 miles deep of ice, but it's on a skid, meaning it's at a big angle going into the ocean, and there's water that's melting in the summer, causing massive fissures, and it's huge waterfalls going down to the bottom, and that water, once it hits the bottom of the rock, acts like a skid to degrease the ice to go into the water faster. Also, you have, in Antarctica, you have two ice sheets. One's the size of Spain, the other's the size of Greece. And if all that melted, you're looking at a 230-foot rise in sea levels. But let's not look at that. Let's just say one big chunk came off. That's doable. Here's what they're saying now. Quote, this is from the American Association for Advancement of Science, the largest group of scientists in the world. They're saying that it could have large-scale collapse of the Antarctic and Greenland ice sheets. That's the first time I've seen them actually predict that. Now they're saying it. Quote, large-scale collapse of the Antarctic and Greenland ice sheets. Collapse of part of the Gulf Stream. Well, that would turn Europe, England, Ireland, Scotland into another ice age. Loss of the Amazon rainforest. That would affect about 10% of all rain because you wouldn't have the forest to release the precipitate matter, so you wouldn't have rain. You'd have all of South America become drought, and you would think of the die-off there. Die-off of the coral reefs and mass extinctions, end quote. Then you had the prestigious Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Here's their grim assessment. Quote, it is not just about melting ice, threatened animals and plants. Listen carefully. Quote, it's about the human problems of hunger, disease, drought, flooding, refugees, and war becoming worse. The polar bear is us. End quote. And then you have the UN World Meteorological Organization. It just released its report. And when is all this supposed to happen? 200 years? 100 years? No. It could happen in 14 years. Huh. That's optimistic because I have the people we interviewed, including a Dr. Professor McPherson, Professor Emeritus of Environmental Sciences, said it could happen in as little as 8 years. So, if that's not bad enough, rest assured that there will be prodigious new reports on climate change in the coming years, all from teams of sober, respectable scientists assuring us again that the next set of findings indicate the planet is going to get hotter, much hotter, that extreme weather conditions are going to worsen, that drought is going to be endemic, that food production is going to suffer disastrously, that sea levels are going to rise, and that chaos is going to ensue. I think the message is clear for those who at least are open to it. Can we change any of that? No. Our political system is so corrupt. The corporatization of our body politic is so complete that the corporate liberals, the corporate, like the Nation magazine, the corporate conservatives, where they will be able to give you some insights and articulate some points intelligently on some issues, they're still always going to be defending those at the head of their party. And those people are beholden to those who wrote the big checks, and that's how it works. You cannot reform a corrupt system, and you cannot change it. The paradigm is too powerful, and they're interconnected. Foundations, think tanks, advocacy groups, and the media, they are all connected. So try to get the truth out, and you see how impossible that is. But then what is the point? Well, the point is, there are now, more than ever before in American history, there are more people saying, I see it, I want the truth, I can't get it on the media, MSNBC, NPR, many of the people on Pacifica. But where do I go? Well, that's what you're listening to. And there are tens of millions of us. In fact, 43% of all voters are now independent. And that's a big step away from the corporate-controlled Democrat and Republican parties. There are more independent parties now. And we're personally taking our money out of their banks. We're turning off their media. We are not voting for them. We are not shopping in their stores. So one by one, we are making a difference. And we're then aligning ourselves, the we. The future is the we, working together to make it a better world. And it's happening. And I'm optimistic for those who get ahead of the curve. This is the Alliance of Natural Health. Quote, on this year, NPR's All Things Considered aired a segment lamenting the low vaccination rates for the human papillomavirus vaccine in American children. 33% of girls and 7% of boys have received all three recommended doses of the vaccine. Apparently no independent journalist research on the subject. Both the segment and its companion article simply parroted a recent CDC Center for Disease Control report. The introduction to the piece called The Vaccine Safe and Effective and went on to claim, quote, studies to date have shown no significant safety problems, end quote, with the human papilloma vaccine. Well, first of all, I'm calling you out. All things considered, I'm inviting you on this program to debate me. If that's the level of your scholarship and if that's the level of your scientific acumen on a public health issue, then you have not looked for the truth, and maybe you could not handle it if you had it. Because we know who funds PBS and we know who funds NPR. This is dangerously misleading. Many children could be harmed by it. A quick glance at the CDC's website reveals significant side effects. The center received 22,000 reports of adverse events following Gardasil human papilloma vaccine from June 2006 to March 2013, and 8% of these reports considered, quote, serious, including 157 deaths, and diagnosing encephalitis, brain injury, seizure, convulsions. This was more side effects reported than any other vaccine, period. And you couldn't find that? Beyond the CDC, medical journals have published a variety of alarming case studies of human papilloma vaccine reactions. According to the British Medical Journal case study, the human papilloma virus vaccine may be causing ovarian failure. This side effect is particularly alarming, not only as a tragedy of the individuals involved, but it could have significant implications for future population growth. Paradoxically, on its human papillomavirus fact sheet page, the CDC admits 6 reports of premature menopause and ovarian disorders, but says, quote, there's no reason to be concerned. Well, why don't you call up the 156 families of the people who died? Why don't you call up the 22,000 families, the people who had adverse reactions, say, not to worry? The arrogance and the hubris, the insensitivity of bureaucrats and technocrats is just appalling. But it doesn't end there. The Medical Journal of Australia records the case of a woman who 4 days after vaccination developed pancreatitis for which, quote, no other cause beyond the vaccine could be discerned. The European Journal of Neurological documents 6 patients who developed post-tachycardia syndrome, a heart disorder that brings on fainting, spells, dizziness after receiving the vaccine. So why, with all this data, including over 100 documented deaths, haven't government studies shown significant safety problems? The CDC takes the position that will only consider peer-reviewed research, not the raw data represented by the adverse events reports. But they also refuse to sponsor the peer-reviewed research themselves. This is a blatant evasion of the issue. The commission by the Department of Health and Human Services and carried out by the Institute of Medicine did attempt to link specific adverse events to specific vaccines, and found a causal link to anaphylaxis in the human papillomavirus vaccine. But they ignored 22,000 reports on adverse events reporting system of the vaccine. Instead, it looked at only 15,000 petitions for compensation filed with the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program for 17 different vaccines. And only 220 petitions specifically were for the human papilloma vaccine. So here's what we have. 22,000 people reported to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System of the United States government that the human papillomavirus vaccine hurt them. The CDC, or the Health and Human Services, only looked at 220 petitions and avoided looking at 22,000 reports. Wow. What kind of fraud is this? Even in the peer-reviewed research, the raw data alone suggests that human papillomavirus may be the most dangerous vaccine, and there are plenty of other facts on this. So, we continue to warn the public that the human papillomavirus vaccine is dangerous, deadly, and the government is covering up and complicit with the vaccine makers. I'm Gary Null. I'm now told the phones are lit up, so we're going to go right over there and say hello to, Smaldia from Brooklyn? Is that your name?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
That's Claudine. Yeah, I'm just going to ask, I was watching your supercharger immune system. I was mentioning some things to take to strengthen your immune system, to lower your allergies. But I also have yeast, so I want to know if I should still use the watermelon juice. And if I shouldn't, what should I replace it with?
Okay. Watermelon juice is still good, providing that at the same time you take vitamin C and quercetin with it, and also take some garlic supplements. That's what I would recommend. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Walter from Virginia. Hi, Walter.
I have a friend, and she's 90 years old, and she and her husband, who's 92 years old, who've been married for 65 years, they both listen to you over the telephone. And she has an issue with swelling in her lower legs and ankles, and she wanted me to ask you if there's anything that she can do to help that.
Well, it depends upon the underlying cause. You have to look first at your circulatory system. You have to look at the balance between potassium and sodium. Generally, when they're swelling, you have to eliminate any form of sodium that you're taking except naturally through foods and take more potassium. Ironically, coconut water is one of the best single sources in all of nature of potassium. But bananas still have potassium or potassium supplement. So correct that imbalance, and then green juices are very good for that, as well as a simple juice made of celery, cucumber, and green apple, and red grape. That's great for swelling. That's what I would recommend. And thank them for listening. Appreciate that they're tuning in each day. Thanks a lot. Now, I'm just told that we have one of our nutritionists, Sandy. And by the way, just so people understand, I wish you could have seen our office today. All day, people in and out asking questions, wanting help. People watch films. And I work with those who are most seriously ill, try to help them. But what I've done is I've hired really good nutritionists and people who have experience helping people, and they give free counseling. No gimmicks, and we've helped tens of thousands of people. And anytime you have something that you've done to help turn someone's life around, I want to know about it. So Sandy's on the line. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Gary.
And Sandy, the person's on the line now, his name is Ruben?
Yes.
Ruben, what condition did you have when you first started your lifestyle behavior modification changes?
Very shortly after I was sitting in my endocrinologist's office, he pulled out his prescription pad and he started to write a prescription for insulin for me. And I said to myself, I am never filling this prescription. There must be an alternative way. And I went to Sandy, and she prescribed a powerful, practical guideline for me and a program that worked for me naturally with nutrients and supplements. And then within a remarkably short period of time, through her coaching, she was able to say, Ruben, you have to watch what goes in your mouth. You have to make sure these things don't go in your mouth. And you have to make sure to sweat a lot exercising. Your weight will come down. Your sugar will come down. And you will not have to take insulin. And today, I am no longer in danger of being a diabetic.
Good. What else has improved? That's a big one.
Well, naturally, it's like a graph. So, Gary, you have the weight going down, the blood pressure going down. Naturally, the blood sugar goes down. My pulse goes down. All the vital statistics went down. And I have far more vitality. I was conking out at my desk during the day from whatever I was eating during the day, and I am bright-eyed and bushy-tailed all day long now. Sandy Method is working great.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you calling. Interesting, because when I was watching the piece on 60 Minutes, and I'm sure many of you saw it, there's the Good for Them, a group of doctors and volunteers take this truck with all their medical equipment on it into what they called a third world nation in the United States, through Tennessee and Alabama and all these places. And these people had all these diseases, and they don't have any insurance. Millions don't have any insurance. And they talked about how they gave them x-rays and how they gave them, you know, vaccines and how they gave them medications and helped them get into hospitals wherever possible. And I found it very noble what they were doing, and I commend them for their efforts. Not one word was said about how to prevent any of these conditions. Not a word about you don't need to get on insulin. If you have the right type of input, you can change the outcome of diseases. So they're looking as the inevitability of diabetes, heart disease, and cancers. These are not inevitable. And you are just one of tens of thousands who've been helped. They can show that. And I just wish that the mainstream media would just bring people on who have a different perspective and let them know they're medical doctors, there are holistic veterinarians, there are chiropractors, holistic nurses, holistic dentists, naturopathic physicians, health coaches, dietitians. There's a lot of different people, about 80,000 different people, who have alternative approaches. And we wouldn't have to have these people suffer and die or end up in crisis care because they couldn't afford any medical insurance. Not a word about prevention. Not a word. So I'm glad to hear that you're doing well, Ruben. And Sandy, and by the way, Sandy doesn't prescribe anything. She recommends and suggests changes and educate people on how to make those changes. Larry does the same thing. All of our nutritionists and health coaches, they guide people through a transition from an unhealthy lifestyle to a healthy lifestyle. What a person does medically is up to their doctor. We don't interfere there. Thank you, Sandy. And if anyone wants to be helped free, it's a public service, you can call 212-874-4000, 212-874-4000, because I can't help the tens of thousands of people who need help. I do as much as I can for the most seriously ill, but everyone else, they at least can get some free help. Okay, 212-874-4000. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, I've got a very interesting question here. In my emails, which I think all of your audience is going to appreciate. The person said that, you know, she and her friends listen to you and primarily because they appreciate your honesty with your reporting. It's all based on truth and fact and real science and not pseudoscience. And her question is, why can't there be any real, honest reporting out there? Why is it that you're the only one doing this?
I'm not the only one. There are very conscientious people who are bringing the people the truth. Just look at Chris Hedges in his field, Naomi Prinz in her field. Who are we filming, I guess, tomorrow, the day after? Cornel West, Glenn Ford with Black Agenda Report. There are thousands of people who are bringing in their field the truth as they can see it. But you see, Luann, I would look at it a little differently. I don't believe we have two schools, those that tell the truth and those that don't tell the truth. That means duality. I believe we do not have duality here. I believe we only have truth, and then how far do we go from the truth that is universal in order to align ourselves with our beliefs, our biases, our prejudices, our certainties, our illusions, and hence our realities. So if you have 900,000 plus doctors in the United States, which you do, and if you have maybe 3,000 of those physicians, most board certified, using complementary and alternative approaches or embracing natural techniques where possible and using their orthodox methods where necessary, then why aren't the other 900,000? Or 3,000 is a percentage of 900,000. You're dealing in the kind of dynamic minimalism that you would have people listening to a Pacifica station, you know, like 13 people on a park bench. They've lost it. Why? Well, in their mind, they started with the ideal. We want to help people. We want to heal people. And then their conditioning took them a step away from it. And then their biases took them a step away. And then the conditioned programming. Don't listen to those people. They're patients. They're anecdotal. If every patient you see tells you that when they took something, it was bad, don't believe them. Believe the textbook. Believe the Bible of medicine. In psychiatry, they now have oppositional defiance disorder, meaning, and it states that, if you speak out, if you argue over issues, well, then you're suffering from a psychiatric disorder, and therefore, legally, they could, in a court of law, say that your information should not be taken seriously because you're suffering from a psychiatric disorder, oppositional defiance disorder. Well, that means every person on the planet that speaks up for any truth can then be marginalized. Well, guess what? Did anyone ever think that maybe that's one of the ways they could stop people from telling the truth, is to pathologize their truth? So once again, you started with the truth. Look at something for what it is and just say what it is. What is it? That's the truth. That's the light. And then every step you take away from being able to tell the truth, you recede into darkness. Until one day, you're a person that knows that the New York Times will never take on the pharmaceutical industry, will never take on the nature of medicine itself, will never take on the corruption within the AIDS community of the hundreds of billions of dollars that have been made by people and groups and small activist groups, but killing people in the process, not looking at the real causes of supporting a person's immune system that we have reported on. You will have people in orthodoxy still killing their patients by giving them drugs that are known not to be good, and synthetic hormone replacement therapy to 10 million women where 1.3 million you're putting at risk. And you say, ask the average doctor, do you want to hurt a woman? Of course I don't. Do you want to save a woman? Of course I do. Do you want men to develop breast cancer? No. Would you want your daughters to develop breast cancer? Absolutely not. That's silly, stupid. Then why are you giving them the very therapy that can precipitate that? Why are you telling them that the diet that they're eating that is rich in heterocyclic amines, fried food, especially barbecued food, that you have not told them to stop eating, nor your patients? Then how in the world are you really supporting the health and wellness of your female patients, let alone the women in your own life? Then you have this conflict. What seems like duality is not. It's merely degrees of separation from the truth. And that's all of our institutions. That's all of our belief systems. That's the corruption within all systems. And that's what we have to do, is try to inspire more people in their fields, whatever it may be, a reporter or anyone else, to tell the truth. I had three separate reporters interview me yesterday on the problems at BAI and Pacifica. Three. All right? And do you know why I gave the interviews? I said, okay, but I wouldn't on the West Coast, a reporter out there, because I knew that these three were people who were coming from the truth, so I knew that they wouldn't do a hatchet job. I knew that their intent was not to hurt the station or the foundation, but rather to try to reveal the truth to help its listeners know the truth. But if I talk with a reporter, and if I, first thing I'm going to do, I'm going to look at that reporter's background, look at what they've written, look at their position, look at their allegiances, because that's going to tell me whether or not I'm dealing with a robot, whether I'm dealing with a program cult member. And almost all members of the media, like all government agencies, like all bureaucrats, they're members of a cult. They started off as a part of the human race, and each time they compromise on a principle for their own security or political allegiance or ideology, they made one more separation from that truth. We call it duality. I call it the inability to align with that which is natural and honest. Hope that answers the question.
It sure does. And I'm just going to add one more thing. Many people have appreciated the fact that it's not just about giving the information. It's about giving the information context. And I think that's really what separates you as well. From the mainstream media, you give everything a context. It's very easy to take things that you say and take it out of context to apply to one's own agenda. And you make sure that you put things in its proper context so that it's easier for us to understand and all the complexity of all the issues that are being presented. So, and people do appreciate that.
Thank you. What good does it do to tell the truth if the people are so out of alignment with the truth, they cannot harmonize with the truth, therefore they must both reject your truth and you as a messenger of it, and that's why we have racism, sexism, that's why we have disparity between those who have and have not, that's why we have the destruction of nature without concern of the consequences. That's why we have gross denialism, because if we looked at the truth and looked in the mirror and could not disguise the face it's showing back at us, then what is our option? And we're afraid of looking at the options to what we've created. We're like a nation of 318 million people. About 270 million of those people are driving blindfolded off a cliff. Thanks for your call, Luann. Let me just conclude today with one more thing, and this is from Anthony Irwin from Foreign Policy and Focus. Quote, earlier this month in Brussels, U.S. and European negotiations were held for a fourth round of secret talks on the proposed Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, the TTIP. The agreement would remove so-called trade barriers between the U.S. and Europe by eliminating tariffs and weakening the regulatory authority of nations. But the key issue on this point is a controversial provision called Investor-State Dispute Settlement, ISDS, Investor-State Dispute Settlement, allows foreign corporations, there's over 75,000, to sue governments before special international tribunals over domestic laws that interfere with corporate profits. The tribunals are not accountable to any national, public, or democratically elected body. Corporations around the world are using similar in investor state dispute settlement provisions under existing trade agreements to extract taxpayer money from national governments. The actual or potential government losses are severe. And as corporations have become more adept at exploiting provisions like this, trade agreements are getting worse for the rest of us. So, for those 700 trade advisors that represent the elite lobbyists and lawyers and policymakers within these corporations, you are shredding the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, all of our state and local and federal laws. In fact, your law, if this passed, would supersede all laws in the United States. Our legislators know that, the president knows this, and yet they want to fast-track all this with the authority of the executive branch to negotiate trade agreements. This is a completely vile and corrupt treaty, just like the Trans-Pacific Partnership is vile and corrupt. And let your legislator in Congress, House or Senator or both, let them know you're opposed to the the Atlantic Treaty or post the Trans-Pacific Partnership Treaty. Thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Nall.